Tim, no Baskin today. Instead, you got Phelps and Tom Withers.
Sounds like a damn good twosome to me, man. You know, so like in this scramble, everybody's going to be contributing instead of like us carrying Baskin.
I hope he's listening.
Agreed?
I hope he's listening. I'm
By
not going to say
every time I hear that song, man. Every time I hear that song, I think of Jerry Reed's lead guitar player's girlfriend. So that's how far back I go with that song.
Wow, she must have been a looker.
I'm Googling right now.
You've seen the movie The Hangover, both you guys have,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
The Hangover, more than The Hangover 2, but I told you long ago, we had a weekend like that, me and four buddies in Nashville back in 1981, and ended up somehow or another, I won't get into it. I'm going to try to make a screenplay, but everybody's going to think I ripped it off The Hangover.
Yeah.
I think the Hangover ripped it off our musing somewhere. Somebody sat around and took notes while we were reliving that that lost weekend.
So
where many young men came of age.
Goodness gracious, Tim! This is a family show.
I know it is.
I like you going in the other direction.
Well, come of age means a lot of things. It doesn't just mean what your dirty mind thinks it means.
Were there tattoos and tigers involved down in Nashville?
Hey, this is back when Nashville was an outpost. You know what I'm saying? And
sure.
Before it became what it is now is all things to all people, and they all try to show up on the same time on Saturday night. I was down there three weeks ago with my son's Corey, who's getting married the end of this coming week for his bachelor party, and we had a great time. But there were so many people in and around Broadway in that area. You know, the main area there, like we were in Morgan Wallen's bar for quite a while. And, Kid Rock's got to play. You know, there were so many people there. It was crazy.
You mentioned it. It's become the bachelor and bachelorette party retreat spot for the entire planet, it seems like.
Yeah. What happens in Nashville stays in Nashville.
That's the way it's going now.
Wait a minute. What did we do last night? That's the reason why.
There's your screenplay. That's perfect.
What did we do last night? Yeah, that's a good one. Hey, this included us having to go get a guy out of the pokey we couldn't find the next morning. It's the same damn story. I mean, it's unbelievable, except he was in the pokey.
You must have told the story on some show, and somebody wrote it down and made a screenplay.
Exactly.
I think people put bits and pieces together, but I'm going to tell you something. Based on the movie I watched, ours is a much better story. I mean, it's got some unbelievable stuff in it.
I can't wait to see the movie.
I digress.
It's gonna be great.
The two key terms you have to keep in mind is Printer's Alley and the Black Poodle, and you can look them up. Printer's Alley's still there, but the Black Poodle's under new management. I think it might be the red. The red retriever or something.
The red spaniel, yeah.
Yeah, the red spaniel, the cocker spaniel.
I love it. So Tim, we know, you know, you love working the U.S.
I gotta
Open.
Save that line. I'm using that line again, the cocker spaniel.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Glad I could help. I contributed to the screenplay. That's beautiful. Yeah. Should we be surprised, A, that the Open Championship is just played on a course at Royal Portrush that you just look at and you think, oh my God, that looks just awesome. And then that Scottie Scheffler is working his way up the leaderboard.
Yeah, well, both of those things are interesting. You know, I watch a lot of YouTube TV anymore, and I watch Grant Horvat, the golfer, and also the Bryan brothers, and they played, it's called Make the Cut, where they play former majors, venues, and the majors treat them. I mean, the venues treat them really nice. They set them up with a lot of things, but they played this 2 weeks before this tournament. And I remember Royal Portrush from 18 or 19, whenever it was played there the last time the Open, and didn't remember as much about it. You know, I could almost go play St. Andrews without a caddy in terms of knowing which way to walk. You know what I mean? I would need the caddy to actually help me find my ball. That would be his primary job if I played St. Andrews. But you know how you are quite familiar with that golf course, you know, just like the Masters and stuff. But this one is one you do need a guide, you know, almost carrying you around there and stuff. But it's it's so lush, for want of another term. And it's, and now these, a lot of these British Open courses are more like high level, United States courses. Whereas, I mean, it looks like the grass, the turf has been put on like, fondant on a cake, you know what I mean? Or the molded, where they just kind of lay the icing over the cake and mold it down over it. I mean, it's just so cool looking. And the traps are bits, but you know, this is obviously, I was at the Oakmont for the Open, this year, the U.S. Open. And, that's still the most tricked up golf course I think I've ever seen. Definitely seen live. That's one of the reasons I got into this volunteer, being a volunteer at the Open, U.S. Open, because I wanted to see some of these courses that I've never been to and see them at a reasonable price. I just had to do 4.5 hours of work a week, you know, like you guys do. Y'all do your 2.5-3 hour gig here, and then you're free to go pursue biking or whatever. It's cycling. Excuse me, not biking, Tom.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah.
Cycling. You're free to go do your cycling and stuff, but it's just the way some of these courses are maintained to me is crazy. But then you think about it, they're almost all upper level private courses for the most part. They don't see anywhere near as much traffic as your regular Muni does, which is tough. You know, the fact that Munis are in such great shape now, I think, is a testament to just the rise of golf course management. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. Port Rush, there are so many places I could see myself getting totally lost on this place.
Well, as you were just talking, Tim, we just saw Scheffler, you know, put a pitch within about 8 feet of the pin on 10. So he'll be putting for a birdie to go within one stroke. I was wondering if you saw his comments earlier this week. Scotty, who at times can be pretty introspective, had some kind of interesting things to say about his career and winning, and wondering if you saw any of those, Tim.
Yeah, you know, I did, but remind me of a couple of them because I get them all mixed up. I watched him play a round of golf on television with Grant Horvat, the guy I was talking to a while ago. And Scotty is such a regular kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, just a regular dude who understands he's extremely privileged to be playing for big time money and stuff. And yeah, somebody has to be number one in the world, and he's the guy right now. And yes, I am watching this. I've got it on my DirecTV channel where it shows four different camera angles at once and stuff, including, you know, featured groups. But remind me of those comments and what caught your attention, Tom.
Here's what he said. He said, "This is not a fulfilling life. It's fulfilling from a sense of accomplishment. It's not fulfilling from a sense of the deepest places of your heart.
Right.
It's something I wrestle with on a daily basis." And then he said, "Tim, it's like showing up at the Masters every year. It's like, why do I want to win this golf tournament so badly? Why do I want to win the Open so badly? I don't know, because if I win, it's going to be awesome for two minutes."
Yes. And he's right. It's what drives all these guys. I mean, Nick Saban won, what, 7 national championships, but he always wanted to win the next one.
Yeah.
And he always knew the next one was going to be a grind, just like the one he just finished, but in a different way, because college football teams change so dramatically, especially now from one season to the next. You know, like when I was growing up, you know, when Joe Namath came to Alabama, you know, born in Alabama, raised in Texas, but when Joe Namath came to Alabama, I knew I was going to get to watch him for 3 years. He wouldn't go to the NFL. You know what I mean? I mean, you have to watch teams develop and stuff. But the same thing with the golf tournaments now, because there are so many guys, fellas, and you can argue with me if you want, but I'm not going to change my mind on it, so don't waste your time. the depth of the fields now in terms of rattlesnakes that can bite you.
Best ever.
Is so,
I agree.
So much deeper. You know, snakes. Why'd they have to be snakes? You know, Harrison Ford. But there's so many guys. I'm looking at this leaderboard right now while we're talking. I mean, Chris Goddard, I mean, he just won last week, you know, the Scottish Open. And Tony Finau, we know if Tony Finau can keep it together for 4 rounds, Tony Finau can beat anybody. His problem is he always has 1 or 2 rounds that bite him. And Robert McIntyre, I followed him quite a few of his holes of his final round because I was following J.J. Spahn, really, actually, in truth. But Robert McIntyre really impressed me at the U.S. Open this year. Just there's a guy that you've paid very little attention to. He's left-handed, you know, and you know how good he is from watching him live and up close and in person. And Tyrrell Hatton, who, by the way, is probably, if I had to say a guy, I would love to just see win, just to see how it would put golf on its ear, is Tyrrell Hatton, because we all know he's a firecracker with a fuse that's already about half burning before he ever starts his round. And if he can just keep that firecracker from going off, you know, he is very, very good. So to see who Scheffler is going against now and then to beat those guys on a weekend has to be satisfying to you. But he's right. Since he had his kid, you know, he's definitely a different guy. Everybody needs some direction in life, and there's got to be more to it than this. Just like in football, you know, you win the Super Bowl, and then the first question you get asked is, can you win it again? You know,
yeah, it's
pretty stupid when you think about it.
Yeah.
But it can't be. But if you win the Super Bowl and you're 28 years old, there's got to be more to your life than that, you hope, right?
I was going to ask you that, Tim. Is it more about, you know, whether it's Scotty or Tiger or Jack or whoever, is it more about how they're wired, or is this more of a societal thing? Like you said, what have you done for us lately? Yeah, congratulations on the U.S. Open. Can you win the British?
Well, this is what's really interesting about one of the guys you brought up, Jack Nicklaus, is he finished second in majors 19 times. He had more second place finishes than the wins. But what do you remember, right? I mean, it's all about kind of cementing your place in history. But the flip side of it is you were still second best that weekend, those other weekends at majors. That ought to be some kind of trophy.
Incredible, yeah.
I remember when Calvin Smith, remember when the mid-1980s, Carl Lewis was winning everything, right? Mm-hmm. And I did a story. They had the Jesse Owens relays or track meet here in Columbus all those years. I got in charge of covering that. I even covered the Olympics that year in 84. But it was just interesting to me that Calvin Smith was faster. At that moment in time, Calvin Smith was faster than any other human being
on the planet.
Except Carl Lewis. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's a shelf item, but, you know, who put that on their shelf?
Tim Mays joining us from Letterman Row. You just took us to Columbus. Let's stay there. Ryan Day recently was on Bobby Carpenter's show, and he said he's uncertain about who will be the Buckeyes quarterback this year. I think that's interesting. Julian Sain seems to be getting most of the pub. How's that going to play out, Tim, and who do you like?
Well, I mean, you know, you still have to probably think the major chips are on Julian Sain just because of the way just because of his background, his Elite 11 performances. I mean, he looks the part. If you ever watch him on video, his release is ridiculous. It's basically a hair trigger, and it's phenomenal. It definitely sets him apart. And you can, that's something the average person can actually see if they call it up. Compare it even to Lincoln Kinos, the guy he's competing with. But that doesn't mean Lincoln Kinos isn't a true competitor. This guy was an all-around. He was a Gatorade Athlete of the Year, I think, coming out of Pierre, P-I-E-R-R-E, but it's pronounced Pierre the way I understand it, like, you know, the Santa Monica Pier, Pierre, South Dakota, and was a great athlete, but he played like three sports. Probably played 15 sports, but three, and just a great athlete who was the kind of guy you would think you would get coming off of that kind of like high school career, as in he was tough, competitive, and wiry, you know, mm-hmm. W-I-R-Y, because he wasn't a really thick guy yet from a physical standpoint. But he's gained that now. He weighs like 211, 215 now, weighed about 185, 190 when he showed up at Ohio State. And great, great athlete. You know, he'll probably be the star of the softball, the Tyvis Powell softball game here coming up, because he was last year where the current players play former Buckeyes. But he's just a great athlete, can throw a baseball like you wouldn't believe, was a really good basketball player. But then in football, he's one of those guys who just made plays for his team, you know, whatever that took. Well, now, being at Ohio State for going on 3 years, he's much, much better of a passer. and he's bigger, stronger, maybe even faster. And he's got that look about him too, man. He's a competitor. And, you know, I know most people, just because people are lazy, they want to think about the Cotton Bowl a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when he went in for an injured Devin Brown, who had, you know, gotten the start because Kyle McCord had decided to transfer before the bowl game. And, that was the worst offensive line performance I can remember ever covering at Ohio State. But of course the quarterback gets all the blame, but he never had a chance. You know, if you watched him in the spring, like we got to do several times this year, we were blessed in that regard because practices have rarely been open, in the last decade or so. But, and then in the spring game, he started slow, but he came on strong. But what everybody remembers from the spring game is how fast Julian Sayin started in that game. By fast, you know what I mean? Was reading his keys, did a great job delivering the ball and from a passing standpoint, et cetera. So that's what you come away thinking. But I do believe it's not decided, based on everything we saw in the spring. Cause there were days when Lincoln Keenels looked much better, much more comfortable than Julian Sayin did. And that was in practice. So, it'll be interesting. I think both these guys are capable. Julian Sayin would be more the guy you would probably, if you just want to drop back and chuck it, that would be the guy. Lincoln Keenels, if you want to drop back and chuck it, but also you want to add that run element, that true run element, you know what I mean? Not just a scramble, but a true run element where he can beat you running, then he might be the guy. So it's one of those heart-stopping, gut-checking moments for a head coach, because the head coach always makes that call.
Tim, as always, a delight. Thank you, sir.
Well, other than that, I really don't have any insight on the quarterback situation.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah.
Is Tom allowed to bring his bicycle inside and lock it up inside so it doesn't get stolen?
Not yet. I will, though. Hey, whoever's playing quarterback, though, as long as they throw it to number four, they're in good shape.
Yeah, you got that right, buddy. But they got more guys than that. I mean, this is.
Oh, I know.
If they can protect, this could be a hell of a throwing year for the Ohio State University.
Follow it up, right? Tim, thanks, buddy. Enjoy the British Open or the Open Championship.
You got it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Tim. See you, bud.
Absolutely correct. All right, see you, Tom.
Tim May.
Always a pleasure, man.
Joining us on the Fan Hotline, as he does most Fridays. Browns have reported the rookies starting training camp today. Veterans report Tuesday, Dano, is the day, and then get rolling on Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
That'll be fun.
We're going. It's official.
Yep.
It's amazing. I mean, I can't believe we're here. It has felt like it felt like January to about April went as slow as molasses.
It sure did.
And then April to now has flown.
Absolutely.
Now we're looking at football once again.
And right as training camp starts for some teams, every team at some point, Browns rookies today, things are happening around the National Football League. First and foremost here, T.J. Watt gets his contract extension in Pittsburgh. And, Tom, there's that little rivalry. I'll call it little. Maybe it's huge. I don't know. Between Myles Garrett and T.J. Watt. But it's interesting that T.J. gets just a little bit more money than Myles Garrett. So I'm sure there is something to the rivalry. It's like when Francisco Lindor got, $351 million? And was it Fernando Tatis got $350 million? It was something like that.
I think there's a little more of a personal rivalry between those two than they let on.
Yeah, like, I think it seems that way, doesn't it?
It seems like it's, and I know, you know, listen, Miles is very aware of his stats at all times. So, listen, Watt is a fantastic player, like we said before. Both works of art in many ways, both the foundational players for their respective organizations, and two guys we enjoy watching on Thursdays, Saturdays, Sundays, Monday nights. Great players.
It is really true. And, you know, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're trying to bust out a little bit, because the Steelers, for most accounts, are third right now, everybody thinks, in the AFC North. It's like when you're stacking up the teams, it's Baltimore, you know, first and foremost, then it's Cincinnati, and then people are wondering about Pittsburgh. I think it's essential for the Steelers that they brought back Watt. He's happy. He's on board. And you go from there. Because, Tom, you would think on offense, or you have Aaron Rodgers. How's that going to work?
Who knows?
I would think he could be okay.
Yeah.
You know, but I And he was okay last year with the Jets, but Aaron Rodgers usually isn't just okay coming back from, you know, his torn Achilles the year before. I wonder, is it the second year off of his injury he's a lot better, or is it the second year off of his injury his age shows up even more? He's in a new system, and he's just playing out the string.
Well, he played pretty well down the stretch last year, to your point, Jeff. And you know what? And much like Willie Mays falling down the first baseline, and we talked about LeBron earlier, I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going out like that. Like, I think he wants to go out on a high note, if you will. And so I think you'll see the best of whatever he can give at this point, right? So, but getting back to TJ, I think you're right. I mean, this was also a message by the Steelers that we want to hang on to this guy who means so much to us and our identity. I mean, TJ Watt has become as beloved a player in that town as Mean Joe Green, for that matter, right? I mean, he is the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. I also think about Miles all the time in that comparison, and I think about what would Miles' numbers be like if he had Cam Hayward playing alongside of him?
Well, maybe he will this year. You know?
Yeah.
Mason Graham, does he step in? Does he become something? I honestly think that is something to really watch in this Brown season, because though the Browns, I think, have had some competent defensive tackles, I think Dalvin Tomlinson,
I was just going to mention him, yeah.
He did a nice job.
Sure did.
But I can't think of a primo, you know, upper echelon defensive tackle playing next to Miles. They've had good ones, but not that primo guy. And maybe Mason Graham, who Dan was on long before the Browns ever drafted him. Dan just kept saying, give me Mason Graham. Well, you get Mason Graham. And I'm real curious to see what happens there and if he's able to do it. From all accounts, he could be a really good player for this football team for a very long time.
They need it.
Yeah, they really do. I was sad to see Mike Williams, the wide receiver, retiring from the Los Angeles Chargers. And this is just a guy that I've always liked. I remember when he was in college at Clemson, and everybody, and this is not revisionist history, but everybody was saying, man, this quarterback at Clemson, he looks really good. This is the guy. And his name is Deshaun Watson. And I said, okay, yeah, he looks pretty good, but I'll take that wide receiver. I thought Mike Williams was phenomenal at Clemson. And then he came into the league and was a big target, big body, big play guy who just got injured,
yeah.
Tom.
That, he's eight, one of those
year,
guys,
yeah,
right?
8-year yeah. NFL
is that,
career.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
Yeah.
8 years.
I didn't realize you're such a wide receiver aficionado.
I pay attention to wide receivers.
That's your position, huh?
Well, he was so good at Clemson, man.
Yeah.
He was really good.
Long, rangy, good hands.
Big body.
Ran well for his size. Little Cedric Tillman action there.
Well.
We'll see.
That's why I look at Cedric Tillman and I think, man.
Upside.
That grouping of games when Jameis was throwing him the football, he was top notch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That made you think, okay, you missed on Anthony Schwartz and you missed on David Bell, it looks like. But boy, you haven't missed on Cedric Tillman. And then, unfortunately, he came down with got the concussion and was out the rest of the year.
What was the reason for Williams retiring? Injuries or
I think he just said he was just
at the end?
Yeah, I'm beat up. He went back to the Chargers and he thanked him like crazy. You know, he signed with them.
Yeah.
And but in his little announcement, he said, thank you to them, but I've had enough.
You know, we've talked about this briefly before, though, Jeff. I wish fans could appreciate what these guys, and listen, all well-paid, et cetera, getting to play, grown men playing a boys game, that kind of thing.
Yep.
The wear and tear on their bodies is just extraordinary. And I mentioned it earlier, too, that documentary I would urge people to watch that quarterback documentary on Netflix. I'm just going to give them another plug there. It shows Burrow in the offseason and what he puts his body through, what all these guys put their body through to be able to be out there and absorb the punishment they do on a week-to-week basis. It's pretty incredible.
The balance that they have to have between rest, which is essential, and then stressing your body by working out like crazy, which makes it healthier, but is still work that you kind of have to, you know, it makes you stronger and better, but you still have to recover from it.
Yeah, they show Jared Goff sprained his ankle last year. I've forgotten this. And he played the better part of a month on an ankle that probably would have put you and I in bed rest for 2 weeks.
Wow.
he went out there week after week and played.
It's an amazing thing to see what these guys go through. And it made me think one thing when Tim mentioned Alabama, when Tim May, who was just with us, and he mentioned Alabama and Joe Namath. And if and this is going way back, anybody who's in our age group, Tom, would get this. When Joe was with the New York Jets, he was so much fun, and he could sling it, and he could dissect the defense and all. But he didn't move very well. His knees were shot. You can go, I think it's on YouTube, and look up Joe Namath video of when he played at Alabama. He ran
mobile, yeah.
He ran so well.
He was more of a runner than a passer, I think, because of the way Brian ran the offense.
I couldn't believe it. Because
Is it really him?
Yeah, the only Joe I knew couldn't move. And it just goes to show what happens to the bodies of these guys. And you know pro football players who have moved on and retired. I know guys who have moved on and retired. When I see a pro football player who's retired and he's not limping or not nursing his shoulder or not telling me about multiple body parts that are being replaced, I think congratulations. You dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
You dodged it.
It's part of the reason Joe Thomas went out when he did, right? Like once it finally got to the point where that streak was no longer alive and he was injured, well, that's it. It's why Joel Bitonio thought very seriously about not coming back for this next year.
And Joe seemed elated when he retired. You know, as I've said on our show before, he never missed a play until he did.
Got out in one piece.
Never played another one. Nope, never did. It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan.